You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour of the Made of Clay Report is Marjorie Hoffman. Good morning, Marjorie.
Hello, glad to be here.
It's good to have you here. So, Marjorie, you know from having listened to a few of these shows how the drill is. Who are you? What do we need to know about you? Qualities, labels, things to start the conversation.
All right. Well, I'm a native New Yorker, which you'll probably pick up as I continue talking.
Uh-huh. And by that, you mean New York City.
New York City. I grew up in the Bronx, on the Grand Concourse, and I was part of a middle-class Jewish family. And all of my life, I've been interested in art and in education.
Wow.
And I have two beautiful daughters who are now grown and flown the coop. My husband is a native Brooklynite.
Uh-huh.
We enjoy New York City very much, but we're very, very happy to be living here in Ithaca, where we've lived for the last 25 years. We're both retired now, so we have a lot more time to enjoy our lives. And I think we're doing a pretty good job of it.
Uh-huh.
So far, my husband's been retired for about a year.
Uh-huh.
And I have been retired for a couple years. I was an art teacher at the Elizabeth Ann Clune Montessori School.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm an artist. I'm a mother. I'm a sibling, a wife.
Mm-hmm.
I love living in Ithaca. And, well, that's pretty much it for starters.
Uh-huh. Good, good. What does it mean to enjoy your retirement?
Well, retirees always say they don't know how they got everything done before they retired. So that's kind of true of myself. I didn't become a professional artist until I retired.
Uh-huh.
I can't say that I have a booming business, but I am very much involved with what I'm doing.
Right. So your avocation has stepped into your vocation.
Right, yeah. I would say so.
Yeah.
And it's kind of split between that and between a lot of volunteer work that mm-hmm. I do, that mm-hmm. I've been doing for a long time, but now I have more time for that. And then in addition, my husband and I can go to a concert or a lecture at the drop of a hat every evening if we wish.
Mm-hmm.
And we really take advantage of Cornell's wonderful offerings and Ithaca College's wonderful offerings. We're always at Ford Hall or Barnes Hall or wherever. We really enjoy that. And we also go to the theater very frequently.
Uh-huh. That's neat. So that sounds like a wonderful way to enjoy your retirement.
Yeah.
Meaningful work with your hands, and you can go and do what you wish to with the one you love.
That's right. Right.
You came with some music, and we're going to start with Joan Baez's Forever Young. Do we need to say anything more than the title, or what? What?
Well, it's a favorite of mine. She is a favorite artist of mine. I've been listening to her since I was a teenager.
Right.
And I'm so very thankful that she still has a beautiful voice. We've seen her here in Ithaca. And this particular song was one that I sang for a friend of mine at his retirement party. So he loved it. I learned it.
Here we go.
May God bless and keep your ways. May your wishes all come true. May you always do for others and let others do for you. May you build a ladder to the stars and climb on every rung, and may you stay. Forever young. truth and see the light surrounding me. May always be courageous, stand upright and be strong, and may you stay.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest on this hour is Marjorie Hoffman. So Marjorie, given who you are now in life, looking back, what were some of the daily routines or some of the events that you have come to value for shaping what you value now?
Okay, let's see. I think I'll talk about the Jewish side of me. Growing up, although I lived in a Jewish community, I did not have any Jewish education or observances, particularly.
And the Grand Concourse was a culturally Jewish neighborhood.
Correct. Yeah. Right. Yeah. And my friends at school and my teachers mostly were Jewish. We shared that. Then I met my husband, who had a more orthodox upbringing. And when we decided to marry and so forth, I took on some of the practices, like keeping kosher, that kind of thing, and celebrating the holidays, attending synagogue on the holidays. When we moved here to Ithaca, I had two girls. One was in second grade, and we looked for a Jewish education, which led me to Temple Beth El, where I'm a member. I'm also, at this point now, past president of the synagogue. And that was a major change for me, attending services, learning more about the religion, its practices, meeting other people who were also actively engaged. So when my older daughter became bat mitzvah at age 13, I decided that I needed more education myself. So that was a turning point for me. I worked with two lovely women who had much more of a background than I did. I learned to read Hebrew. I learned the liturgy of the service. And that engaged me much more deeply in that community. So I then decided, and it was at the same time that a couple other women were in a similar place, we decided to have a ceremony called Bat Torah. So it's similar to a bat mitzvah, but it's a daughter of the Torah, because hopefully we've been practicing the mitzvot for a long time.
For a long time, sure.
So, yes,
can
you have
a question? I want to, before you get too far into what you did, looking back at that, the move here and the taking your kids to Hebrew school to take them to take them through, take your daughter through bat mitzvah, what changed inside of you to pull? What made it? What drew you closer to wanting to know more? What happened? Or you know, was it slow evolution? What was it? Were there some things that caught your attention that hadn't before?
Well, I think part of it is natural human curiosity.
Well, not everybody's naturally curious.
Okay.
But you
well,
are.
Curiosity is, what is this?
Yeah.
And the other was feeling like an outsider and wanting to change that. And now I have a greater understanding when I meet new members of our synagogue who may not have a background either. And I totally understand how you might feel like an outsider coming in. The services are in Hebrew, you know, you may not know what you're supposed to do here and there, all of these different things. So so that I think the not wanting to be an outsider is what drew me. And then there's a musical interest, you know, it's just very, very beautiful. Prayers and chanting of Haftarah has a beautiful melody and things like that that I enjoyed learning. So part of it was just pleasurable.
Right. And the singing has the same effect on your body as meditation.
Okay.
In terms of the biology of releasing the endorphins and relaxing you so that you come into a meditative. If you sing for several minutes, even less, if it will happen. And the singing is such a beautiful and essential part of so many traditions.
Right, that's true. Actually, I realized that when I was taking blood pressure at home. I took it, this doesn't look good, and then I ended up singing a song and it was lower at the end. So that's funny.
Yeah. And and so you, in part to fit in part because of pleasure, and you found two women who were in the same space.
Yeah, I mean, different.
And that's where I interrupted you.
That's correct. Yeah, I mean, they each had their own reasons and own experiences, but it was fun to work together with them. We split up the service, and you know, we all invited guests and so forth. It was a lot of fun. So, so that was a big life changing. I think your question did have to do with. Mm-hmm. Life-changing experiences.
So how were you, how did your life change from before that to after that?
Well, I would say that my daily activities changed. There was more time spent on reading the Torah, learning certain things that I might be required to do.
Mm-hmm.
And then that just led right into doing more of other aspects of synagogue life. So it gave me really a second home in Ithaca.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that is definitely still my second home. It's my main community. And so I've done, you know, all different kinds of things and continue to at the synagogue.
Yeah, that's neat. That's really neat. You've had what kinds of roles did you take on after this Bat Torah? And were you the first women to do that at the synagogue, or had there been a precedent for this before?
I think there was a precedent. I don't have a good memory about that, but so I won't offer any facts, because they might not be real. But there were other situations way back before I came to Ithaca. There was a whole kind of controversy over whether women should take a role in services. Mm-hmm. And so that was settled way before I ever arrived. And I was very happy about that because I wouldn't have felt comfortable in a religious situation where I wasn't an equal.
Right. In the conservative, men. I believe in the conservative tradition, you have egalitarian congregations and ones that aren't, that weren't. But I imagine most of them have transitioned.
Well, certainly Temple Beth El has.
Yeah.
So then I've been working on our Temple Arts Committee for many years. And I'm on its caring committee, which was developed in part when I was the president. And that's a welcoming type of committee and mm-hmm. helpful. You know, people need something or they're brand new members. That's been a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So in my daily tasks, my life changed because it broadened into all of those various jobs,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
self-appointed jobs.
Right. Well, I mean, faith is when you do something from faith, it's by your own choice and consent. Otherwise, it's not a matter of faith. And your practicing Judaism has become a central part of your life.
Right.
Whatever experiences have been significant? Did you live in the city the whole time before you all moved up here 25 years ago, or had you lived elsewhere?
No, we were in the city. I grew up in the Bronx, and then graduated from college. I moved to Brooklyn.
Right. After having met your husband, or
I met him in Brooklyn. So you're asking about changing experiences,
right? I had never made this connection, and maybe it's not true, but I lived in the Bronx in the 80s, and over on Pelham Parkway, a neighborhood transition between Italian, Irish, and Jewish, you know, in terms of the space that I was living in. But they were not as consistently observant Jews as there were that I knew in Brooklyn. So I'm wondering, was that a demographic difference, or was that just an artifact of my happenstance?
I can't answer that, really. Yeah. I think certainly, I mean, Brooklyn is a home of Chabad and
right,
so
and
forth. So, right, and it was there that my husband took me to see on Simchat Torah, the people dancing in the street with the Torah. I had never seen that before. I mean, maybe that happens in the Bronx. I don't know.
Yeah. Or maybe it did back in the day.
Okay.
Let's cut to another piece of music. What would you like to play next?
Well, I guess, speaking of Jewish mm-hmm. things, I'd like to play Debbie Friedman's version. Well, she actually wrote it. It's Lichi Lach. I can tell you about it either before or after.
I would say let's say before so we can listen to it with that
okay.
in mind.
All right. Well, this piece of Debbie Friedman's is based on a portion of the Torah called Lech Lecha, and it comes early in Genesis when Avram leaves his home according to God's instructions, and you know, God promises him that he's going to make a great nation of him.
Yes.
And later on his name becomes Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
So it happened to be the portion that my younger daughter Golda had for her bat mitzvah. And I wasn't familiar with the song
mm-hmm.
until it was, you know, we were preparing for her celebration. And so that's basically the story.
And the song is about that portion.
Yes, it is. God is saying, you know, you'll be a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you feel that way about your own child when they're reaching an age of maturity, that they will be a blessing, that perhaps they'll do wonderful things mm-hmm. for the world, go out, leave your family. That's really what Lech Lecha is all about.
Okay.
You do not know. shall be a blessing. You shall be a blessing. You shall be a blessing.
Listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. And our guest on this hour is Marjorie Hoffman. You have been a very active member of the Jewish community, not just at Temple Bethel. Tell me about that.
Sure. For about 10 years now, I've been active on an umbrella group, which is called the Ithaca Area United Jewish Community. I wish it had a shorter name.
IAUJC.
Right, yeah. And I've been both concurrently and for all of this time, the campaign chair and the programming chair. So it's quite a bit of responsibility. I've really learned a lot working with this wonderful group of people, and they span all the different levels of observance that you might find here in Ithaca. And they've changed over time, but some of them are longtime members.
Right.
And so I've learned a lot doing that. I never before had to ask people for money or write a campaign letter, those kinds of things. But what we do is we collect funds from donors, and then we give out grants, some mostly, or to a good extent, they're local. And then we also send money off to the Jewish Federation of North America, and they use that in different parts of the world.
Right. They have lots of programs and welfare programs around
Correct.
The world. Sure.
Right.
Sure. And
yeah.
I think one of the things people don't realize is that Ithaca is very likely close to 10 to 15% Jewish. If you, because there are such huge numbers of secular, non-religious Jews in this community, and the IAUJC pulls into them, even though it's more strongly rooted in the various congregations, including, I mean, so Temple Bethel to Convor, Kol Havarim to
Correct.
Yes,
and right.
and then there are the groups on campus, which I imagine may participate, but not so much.
Right. And so speaking of that, one of the programs that we have at IAUJC, which I helped to establish is called PJ Library. And it's a free storybook program. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's we help to fund it. And we also get some grants from the foundation that established the program. It's an amazing foundation, amazing program. And so it brings in a lot of Jewish families or partly Jewish families mm-hmm. who perhaps have no affiliation at all. And every month you get a book in the mail. It's appropriate for the age of your child. And they're lovely books. They do not proselytize. They talk about the holidays, and they talk about doing good for each other. They're really
the basic teachings,
right? Basic teachings, and that's one way that we help to spread the traditions.
Mm-hmm, sure,
People who don't want to come into a synagogue, that's fine. And we have events also.
Yeah,
And
you've got one coming up. Is this through IUJC or is
this it's
through?
This program that's coming up is a communal festival that's been organized basically by IUJC, Temple Beth El, and Tikkun V'Or. Mm-hmm. It's to celebrate the holiday of Purim, which is on March 12th. And we're having a big extravaganza, which is going to be in a secular space at the space at Green Star on Sunday, March 12th, starting at 2:30. And Purim is a festive holiday. People, especially children, but everybody dresses up in costume, mm-hmm. Has good things to eat. Sometimes there are carnivals. Mm-hmm. The observance of the holiday includes listening to the Megillah, which is means story, but it's the story of Esther,
right.
Queen Esther,
Book of Esther, yes.
Right, who helped to save the Jewish people from extermination in ancient time. And it's filled with loud noises. Every time you hear the word Haman, he's the villain right. of the story, you make a lot of noise. And so that's actually a religious observance to listen to the story.
Mm-hmm.
So our festival is going to be open to everyone. There actually will be some Megillah readings, so if people are interested in participating in them, they can. There's going to be various entertainment. There'll be a magician. There'll be some Persian-style belly dancing.
Uh-huh.
There'll be the Cornell Middle Eastern Music Ensemble will be there. Plus, there'll be carnival games, face painting, take your picture in a photo booth, all of those different kinds of fun things.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a big space, and it's going to allow for people to just wander around, kind of like a cabin fever type event,
right.
except pointed to this holiday.
Right, and in a certain sense, if you have never had the chance to experience Purim, the hosting it in a non-religious space should remove any barrier to attending. It is, at its heart, a worship, a celebration of overcoming evil by the wiliness of good. It's a way for us to learn about others by being in their experiences where we've been invited in. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing for IAUGC, JC, and Temple Beth El and Tikkun V'Or to do, because many don't know the Jewish traditions.
Right. And especially in these particular times,
yes.
Yes. We felt that it would be so really appropriate to say, come in and learn about us. There's going to be information, like the story is in chapters, and the chapters will be along the wall if you want to read about them. And yes, so definitely the effort in part is to welcome people into learning about our tradition.
Yes.
So we hope we get plenty of people outside of the Jewish community mm-hmm. to come.
And that will be Sunday, March the 12th at 2:30 p.m., at the space, at Green Star Space, at the intersection of Buffalo Street and Meadow Street, Fulton
right.
Street, I guess.
That's right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Good. Yeah. And actually, we're supporting three nonprofit organizations by having this event.
Uh-huh.
One of them is our own Friendship Donation Network here in Ithaca.
Sure.
And there's
a Jewish connection founded by a childhood Holocaust survivor.
That's correct. Yeah. And one of its board members, Ken Finkelstein, is going to be there with some others. I'm not sure who they are. And so one of our activities will be to bag groceries and make greeting cards, and put each person who does this activity will be able to write their own personal message and decorate a card, and stapled to the bag will be what the story of Purim is.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Friendship Donation Network will take these completed grocery bags and distribute them during the week to
yes.
people who need them.
And they're not just essential groceries. There's some sweets and some things, too.
Well, actually, these are essential groceries.
These are essential
yeah.
groceries. Okay.
I was told very clearly.
Oh.
I've been buying the groceries.
Okay.
So they're healthy and essential.
Yes. I have some Jewish friends who on Purim distribute these bags with the story attached. And
right.
And they have some sweets in there as well.
Right, of course. And that tradition, definitely, we're not actually doing that tradition
yeah,
at
yeah,
our event,
yeah,
but
yeah.
that is part of Purim.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Right. That's very sweet, and that yeah. is powerful. You said there were three groups. And that's
yeah, the second local one is the Women's Opportunity Center.
Yes.
They won't actually be on site, but they have given us a bunch of clothing. We're going to have a dress-up corner where you can get your photograph taken, and so we're using their resources.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the third one is the American Jewish World Service, which is not a local organization. It's an American organization that started by Jewish people and strives to help people all over the world,
mm-hmm.
mostly in developing countries.
Uh-huh.
So the proceeds from the admissions are going to be divided up among these three organizations. So they'll be receiving checks at the end, you know, after we get everything figured out.
Neat, neat. Well, let me do the station ID, and then shall we play the Jean-Pierre and Paul?
Sure.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this hour is Marjorie Hoffman, and our next piece is Baroque in Blue, which was a very popular piece from the suite for flute and jazz piano, I believe.
Yes.
Back in the late 1970s. Do you want to say anything about it?
I know that it's just a favorite piece of mine. I went scurrying around looking for the album so I could give you the correct name.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I saw the album cover, I remembered that's why I bought that album in the first place. Has a wonderful painting of a flute and a piano in bed together in a very cartoonish kind of jazzy
right,
with way.
With the flute blowing smoke rings.
Yeah, it's really wonderful, and I know I played the album over and over and over again.
Here we go.
Thank you.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report, and our guest is Marjorie Hoffman. So, Marjorie, you're an artist.
Yes.
You were an art teacher, and now you are a practicing artist.
Yes.
What do you do?
Well, in my last year at the Montessori School, I was asked if I could help them create a wall of acknowledgement. They had had a big capital campaign. They increased their facilities, and they wanted their donors to have special recognition. So I designed and then worked on with others a large wall. It's 14 foot long, and it's a mosaic, and it includes slices from trees that were cut down here in the area that look like trees branching out. And it has a lot of ceramic leaves that I made from first making a mold of a leaf and plaster, and then making these leaves out of clay. Each leaf has an inscription on it. It's also has glass pieces that have inscriptions on them that were made by Tony Serviente. And then there's some wood-burned areas. There's some metal plaques. It's quite a beautiful piece, even if I'm saying that myself.
You're proud of this piece.
Yeah, I'm proud of it. And the reason I mention it is it kind of brought together all the things that I like to do. I've been an artist a long time. The things I enjoy doing the most, working with clay and working with wood. And I also learned to work with stained glass from Tony Serviente, because he first taught me, and then I taught my middle school students, and we built these four large stained glass windows in the tower of the school. And you can see them as you go by at night. And so I combined my various interests, and after I retired, I began to make mosaics of a smaller dimensions that are framed, and that you can say, oh, I love that, and take it and hang it on your wall at home. I've also done since then some commissioned work. Although they weren't mosaics, they were related. They were ceramic pieces in people's kitchens. So I have a business now. It's called And It's Good. And I have a website at anditsgood.com. And so my history, my story.
Is the biblical allusion intentional there?
Yes, it's intentional. And really, I feel like my work is a celebration of our natural world. It can be a celebration of our lives. And it can be a celebration of, you know, events, that kind of thing. So I'm looking for commission work. And, you know, what I would really love is that connection between someone who wants to express something, but perhaps they're not an artist, and they want to be surrounded in their home or surrounded in their house of worship with a mosaic piece that combines a lot of different elements.
So I'm hearing how did you work with the Montessori school to determine what that mosaic would be? Was that part of a process of discovery? How did they express their wishes? How did you interpret? How did that go back and forth?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I haven't really thought back to that time. It was, I was asked to do something, and they very much relied on me for the basic concept. But then lots of people, you know, made suggestions and so forth. And so it was a combined effort. Certainly the whole coordination of the donors and what level of donorship and what each donor wanted as an inscription, all of that was very, very carefully coordinated by Lisa Bushlow, who's quite well known in Ithaca.
Very familiar with development issues.
Right, and she did a great job with that. She was really a wonderful help to the school. And so, but as far as design, I have to say I figured it out a little bit at a time. We knew of a man who cut down trees, and we went to see what he had cut, and we asked him if he could cut slices, and he said yes. So those were the main elements of the mural. And then things came together. It was a learning process for me. I asked a lot of questions. The coordination aspect more had to do with where is it going to go, how big is it going to be, how are we going to install it, and
what
lots
kind of
people
light
helped.
Is it going to get? How are people going to view it?
Right.
Yeah.
And there were lots of helpful people on that end of it.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I want to shift gears a little bit here as we come to the last 15
sure.
minutes of the show. One of the things that I like for people to reflect upon, just so we can hear each other. I mean, in a certain sense, this show operates on people like eavesdropping on our conversation, even though it's meant for that to happen. It's a conversation that we have that others are supposed to listen in on. And the same way with the Purim event that you're doing. You're having people come in so that they can experience that have never experienced it before. What I'm asking now is, what do you do to take care of yourself on an emotional, intellectual, and physical basis throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly? And how do you know you need to do it? How have you learned over the years to take care of yourself?
Well, I think I'll be the first to admit that I don't take care of myself well enough.
You're not the first. In fact, I would say that's a comment from probably 70% of the people I asked that question.
Right.
Well, not 70%, but a lot. The majority, anyway.
Right.
Yeah.
I work with a trainer at a gym, at Center Ithaca, the Finger Lakes Fitness. And I have a great relationship with her. We meet 3 times a week, and I believe strongly that my strength would be much less if I hadn't made that commitment.
And how did you come to make that commitment? How did you find out about the trainer, and how did you choose, why was that an important commitment for you to make?
Well, let's see. I felt like my strength was declining, and I guess I'm
was this after you retired from teaching?
No,
this was while you were still teaching.
Yeah, you know, it was just in general getting harder to do the normal daily things, including standing up after having been sitting down, and I have a particular issue in that I'm an amputee. And so I'm concerned about my mobility as I age further. So I started working with her. And it's 3 hours a week. And we talk about all kinds of fun things. She's a wonderful person. Her name is Sarah Smith. I recommend her highly. You know, so I think that relationship with this young woman has been very beneficial to me.
Right. So you have a relationship, and the purpose was the physical care, but you also have sounds like a fun relationship.
Right.
That keeps it going.
Right. Right.
How have you changed? How has your physical care changed? How has your strength and your how have you changed in the process of practicing this, of doing this physical therapy?
Well,
or physical
I can't
training.
Say that I'm a marathon runner or anything like that.
No, but I wouldn't. I mean, even though I work out 2 or 3 or 4 or 5 times a week, I'm not a marathon runner either. So,
right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know in this day and age, lots of people do work out. And I can't say that I know there's been a great change, but I feel better.
That is a statement.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's all you have to say.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel that if I hadn't been doing this, you know, I just wouldn't necessarily be able to do what I can do. So, So there's that. And there's, of course, family, you know, talking with my daughters. One lives in Brooklyn. One lives in Los Angeles. Reaping the benefits of their love, mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Doing fun things with my husband and friends and so forth. I'd say those are the main ways in which I take care of myself. My artwork, certainly when I'm doing it, it's pleasurable, meditative.
Right. It's funny, in Ithaca, our kids tend to go far away, but the average distance of a child from their mother in New York is, or the median distance is 8 miles.
Wow.
Nationally, it's 18 miles.
Wow.
It's just kind of, we don't think about it that way. Alabama's closer with 6 miles, but there isn't a lot for kids who grow up to do here unless they pave their own way, you know, into something new or entrepreneurial or luck into a job that opens up. You've described kind of the emotional connections and the physical care. What do you do to exercise your mind and the way you think of the world and the way you think about it and experience it intellectually?
Well, I do a lot of reading. It's very eclectic.
Uh-huh.
That certainly keeps me going. I'm open to all kinds of
reading. What are some of the different kinds of things that you enjoy?
Well, right now I'm reading a book called Tracks, and it's by Louise Erdich. And I actually never heard of her at all, but I was at Bound for Glory on Sunday night, sitting in the middle of the Alternatives Library, because they've moved right into that space.
Right.
And all of her books were on a shelf right in front of me.
Uh-huh.
So I said, well, okay, I guess this is an important author. I'm going to, I'll read something.
Sure.
So I'm reading it. I can't tell you yet what she's all about.
Right,
but,
right, right.
But it's quite fascinating. So I'm open to all kinds of books.
Yeah. You're open to what you find.
Right. Yeah, I'm always looking. And so I do a lot of reading. We get the Sunday Times and, mm-hmm, you know, we go through it.
How has the participation in religious life, in Jewish life, how has that evolved over the years? Because you're the past president. And you're active in these events, but how is that as a way of kind of helping you feed you and keep your sense of balance?
Well,
is it too taxing?
Well, it can be taxing. Like Passover can be very taxing. Yeah. But I think that the cycle of the calendar, mm-hmm, the celebrations, which are many, the preparations for the celebrations, are a very important way of life.
Mm-hmm.
And they do tend to anchor me.
Right.
They anchor many others also. And, you know, I know I'm going to see my daughters at certain times of year and that kind of thing, aside from getting together other times.
Right.
So I would say that the Jewish practice is an anchor. I can't say that you seem to be asking about things growing, becoming more.
No, not necessarily. No. Just how does it provide a structure? How do you put yourself? For me, if I don't, I have a religious obligation to the newspaper. from 5 o'clock in the morning or so until 6 o'clock. And I may or may not read it, but I sit there and I meditate and I read it and I don't read it and I move through it and I hold the world in my prayers. And it's what I do daily. And when I do not do that, it's a structure for my life. I am off balance, especially if I miss it for a few days running. But that is a part of what anchors me.
I see.
Calendar, like you have a calendar of activities. There's Shabbat, there's preparation of Shabbat dinner, I would imagine, or
right.
all of these activities that one does to be prepared, and then you can enjoy them. If you get the preparation done and you can let go of the fretting to do right. it, you know, that's, yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so we do have in our lives this Jewish schedule.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. And what I'm very curious about is, and this is more true for among Jews than it is among Christians, and or even the Muslims that I know, is that many times the adults become more involved in their religion as their children are learning it, and then their children wander off. Have your children stayed close to Judaism, or have they like so many after the bat mitzvah or the bar mitzvah, they take a time off or time out and move
right.
on?
Right, they fall into that category. I mean, they identify very strongly as Jewish women.
Yeah.
They both keep kosher homes.
Uh-huh. So that is a high level of observance.
They're not attached, you know, they're not married at this point in their lives, so, and they don't have children. But I assume that when they do, that their practice will increase.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I wish I could say they belonged to synagogues where they lived. I've, of course, pressured them, but
that
unfortunately,
doesn't go very far.
Right.
Yes.
Nothing happened with that.
And,
so, right.
And also, it is ironic that you have come to be more observant and as an adult. But that is a story I have heard so many, many times among people
Absolutely.
Raised in secular Jewish households.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I'm quite happy about it.
Yeah.
Marjorie,
it's been wonderful to get to know you.
Thank you so much. This has really been fun.
And I also just want to put another shout out about the Purim celebration, which is an Ompa, come y'all.
Come y'all. Hear ye, hear ye.
Yes. On March the 12th at 2:30 at the Space at Green Star for food and music and carnival atmosphere and dress up and the telling of the story of Esther and the saving of the Jews from Haman.
Correct.
And his evil plan.
Right.
You wanted to close the show with one particular song.
Right. It's a Jay Unger, Molly Mason tune. It's called Ashokan Farewell. It's a very, very beautiful tune that was written by Jay Unger, and I've loved it for a long time.
Here we go.